evening?
Yes, I can.
How are you, Laura?
I'm good, thank you. And you?
I'm doing well. I was trying to call the office on the video, but I guess nobody's there, so.
I don't think so. Someone is there.
No problem. Shall we get started?
Yeah, sure.
Please join me in saying the Anna Bekoa.
Anna Bekoa.
Gedula Chimi Incha. Da. Alfred Gimel Yitzhak Sadi. The gematria of these six letters is 506, the same as the phrase Ahavatinam, unconditional love. And the name of God, Vav Shin Resh, that deals with memories, but not the memories that are typically we think of, but the memories where we can see the patterns in our life, where we've continued to make the same mistake over and over. And by being able to see those patterns, be able to change them. The letters of the month, the Ayin, that created the constellation Gedi, the Capricorn, the goat, and the Bet that created the planet Shaktai. Together they have a gematria of 72, which is the connection to the 72 names of God. Kabel Rinat Amcha Sagvenu Taharenu Noah Upreshayan Din Tetnun. These six letters spell two Hebrew words, Ra, Satan. Ra means to tear up, and Satan is the negative force that gives us free will. The same six letters can be rearranged to spell Sha'ar Katan, which means small gates, and it's a hint to us, a reminder, to guard our gates, our eyes, our ears, our nose, and our mouth. Because these are the entry points for the negative system. Na gibor dorshe yehudcha gevava shamre nun gimel dalet yud kaf shin. The first three letters, nun gimel dalet, has a gematria of 57, which is the same as the Hebrew word zan, which means parnasah, or sustenance. And it's a sequence to connect us to sustenance. And the real meaning of sustenance is the fulfillment of our desires. Yud Kaf Shin is a sequence of letters that we can utilize to help take back the energy we've given to the negative side through our mistakes. Barchem tacharem rachamei sitatcha tamid gamrem tetet resh saditav kimom pasim kadosh Biro tukha nae adata et kufet et nunayan. Yahid gehe lamcha penei zofre kidushata et gimelamed he zayin kuf. This sequence helps to speed the spreading of the wisdom of Kabbalah during this sixth millennia, during this, our generation. Shabbatenu kabel, ushmatia katenu, yodea talumot, shin kufav, tadiyotah. The first two letters, shin and kuf, have a gematria of 400, which connects us to completion and perfection. The last four letters have a gematria of 506, like the first verse, and connect us to the phrase Ahavatinam, unconditional love, and the name of God, Bab Shinresh, that deals with memories. The idea that we learn from this is that when we recognize the mistakes that we make and change them and inject unconditional love in every step of our process, this will be the path where we will reach completion and perfection. And the eighth verse we say in a whisper. We're reading from the Parsha of Vayera, section 3, the four elements, fire, air, water, and earth, verse 32. Vayhi Noam Adonai Eloheinu aleinu maasei adeinu kunenei aleinu maasei adeinu kunenehu. Vayera el Avraham el Yitzhak ve'el Yaakov ve'el Shaddai Ushmi Hashem lo nodati lachem ribi hiskiya patach ashrei adam lo yach Hashem lo avon v'gomer kamainun b'nei nasha atimin b'la yad'in v'la mistachlan alma kayamin v'alma v'hakuchav baruch Hashem ad bara alma Avad le levar nash v'diukna dilei v'yatkin le v'tikuno v'gin v'yikadal v'yoraita v'yichach v'yoracho. And I appeared to Yitzhak and to Yaakov, Abraham to Yitzhak and to Yaakov, by the name of El Shaddai. But by my name Hashem, I was not known to them. Rabbi Hiskia opens the discussion saying, blessed is the man to whom Hashem imputes no iniquity. How obtuse are people who do not know and do not observe why they are in the world. For when the Holy One, blessed be He, created the world, He made man in His image and made him the way He did, in order that he should be occupied with the Torah and walk in his ways. This verse is so packed with messages, none of them having to do with morality. And if you read the verse on its surface, it implies morality. None of Kabbalah is about morals and ethics. We need to do good deeds. We need to share. But we need to do that not because it's moral, not because it's ethical, but because this is how we can receive what we want. And this is a paradox to the concept of sharing. But when you remove the agenda, I don't want for myself, but I want for the other person. When you remove that agenda of yourself and you generate true sharing, there's no paradox. A complete circuit of energy is created. The Creator shares, and we receive. And by so receiving for the purposes of sharing without an agenda, it is considered as if we are sharing. And that creates the circuit of energy, which is another way of understanding balance. Does anyone have any questions?
Hello?
Yes?
Why you separate ethics? It's not the same as doing a good deed always. It's not the same as acting with ethics.
The philosophers of our world have spent thousands of man hours writing and contemplating and writing again about morality and ethics, justifying why someone should do a good deed. Those same philosophers, Aristotle, Socrates, all the Greeks, all the Romans, all the modern philosophers, they have always taught this concept of morals and ethics. The religions of the world present the Bible as a book of morals and ethics. And the Kabbalists have always told us, taught us, that the Bible is not a book of morals and ethics. And that's what I was explaining, because that's what this verse is implying. The verse is saying it's not morals and ethics. We share because it benefits us. But when it benefits us, it's a selfish idea, and it separates us from the Creator, which is the ultimate desire, to be close to the Creator. So how do we understand that paradox? And it's understood because when you eliminate your own agenda and you share because you want to give pleasure to the Creator, you receive because you want to give pleasure to the Creator. The Creator shares with us. He created an apple. He created an orange. He created a banana. Not to give us energy. He could have made a paste with all the vitamins and minerals that had no taste. Why did he make three or millions of different kinds of fruits and vegetables? He did that because it gives us an opportunity to share back with him. Because when he sees us eating the banana and saying the blessing before and the blessing after, and he sees us following his directions, his recommendations, he receives something called nachas, nachut. He receives a pleasure in his inside, in his interior. The closest thing we have to that pleasure, to understand it, is the pleasure that a grandparent sees watching the baby grandchild start to walk, because he knows that continuity is happening. There'll be another generation. But even that intellectual thought doesn't explain this feeling of joy and happiness and pleasure that comes just by watching the grandchild. That's why I spoke about ethics and morals, so that we realize it's not about ethics and morals. I hope I answered your question, Laura.
Yes. Yes, you did. Thank you.
Okay. Tonight is the first class in a series of classes that could be quite long if you want it to continue. We'll see. I'm reading from a book that was written in Hebrew by the student of the Ari, Rabbi Chaim Vital. And it's called Sharei Gilgulim. The translation is Gates of Wheels. But it's really about reincarnation. We received all of our knowledge and wisdom about reincarnation from two particular books, two particular aspects. One from the Zohar in the Parasha of Mishpatim, which on its surface talks about civil laws. And the Zohar explains that those civil laws are really speaking about reincarnation and the laws of reincarnation and what happens in the frame of cause and effect. And this book called Sharei Gilgulim explains that Zohar, that section of Mishpatim, in a easier way. Now, that book is being translated. The book was written by Rabbi Chaim Vital and amended by his son, Rabbi Chaim Shmuel Vital. And this particular translation is from Rabbi Shabtai Teicher, and who passed away in the process of the translation, and is being completed by Rabbi Peretz Auerbach. And this book is published online with commentary by these teachers by KabbalahOnline.com. The version that I am going to read doesn't include all of their commentary, because I will include some commentary from my own. And people will ask, and validly so, what right do I have to comment and leave out some of their commentary? I have a teacher who indicated to me that the translation and the commentary was not always accurate. It's not to imply that they are wrong. It's to imply that there's differences of agreements, difference of opinions in the pursuit of truth. I have learned the laws of reincarnation directly from the English translation of the Zohar. I have had my own experiences with reincarnation. And I have been given permission to teach it in this way. It is written, I'm writing it on my website, but you can follow along if you have a computer in front of you. It's on the page, and I'm going to give you the link right now, slowly. www.yeshem.com/Kabbalah-advanced-reincarnation.htm. And future classes will have that exact same name, except after reincarnation will be a hyphen, and we will start with numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4, etc. So you'll always be able to follow consistently. The way it is spelled, so there's no confusion, it's yeshem.com, yeshshem.com, / Kabbalah, spelled K-A-B-B-A-L-A-H. Then there's a dash or a hyphen, and the word advanced, A-D-V-A-N-C-E-D. And then another hyphen or dash, and the word reincarnation, spelled R-E-I-N-C-A-R-N-A-T-I-O-N .htm. When you look at this, you will see words in bold, you will see words in different sizes of the fonts, and you should be able to follow which is the actual translation of the book, and which is the commentary, and which is my commentary. One note that I think is a valid one that needs to be expressed to all of us. The publisher, Kabbalah Online, explains that the study of Kabbalistic texts usually recommends that one review the material many times until they are familiar with the vocabulary at a minimum level of comprehension. What actually is being taught here is something that comes from the Talmud that says, in order to truly understand a subject, we need to review the material 101 times. The reason for this multiple meaning, multiple reviews, is because Kabbalistic texts are not designed to be taught or explained or understood logically. They will change your soul. And that takes a process of the Hebrew letters and even the English letters, but on a lower level of energy and transition. This is why the Talmud teaches to review them 101 times, because it's about expanding your consciousness, connecting you in a stronger way to your intuition and to your unconscious. The book starts out, our souls impact and influence several levels of spiritual worlds. The whole book is actually explaining that sentence. Because what does it mean to impact a spiritual world? I'm not going to explain it right now, but from time to time, I will refer to it in these classes. Chapter 1, Part 1. The translation is issued on the Kabbalah Online. It is issued in broken into sections that are smaller than the way it was presented in the original writings. In the original writings, it's done in chapters, like a normal book. But the for whatever reason, they at Kabbalah Online broke that down into shorter sections. And this is part one. We will begin with what the rabbis wrote, that the soul has five names. From the bottom up, they are Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama, Chaya, and Yechida. Translated, they are Yechida, which means singular or unity or oneness. And please note that the word unity is not unified. Unified would imply that there were two or more that are now one. Unity is only oneness. This is a very deep lesson, a deep understanding, and I now want to comment about the idea that the soul has five names, but to ask the question, why did Rabbi Chaim Vital start the teaching of reincarnation by saying that we will begin with the statement from the rabbis, meaning the Talmud, that the soul has five names? Why does he begin with the names? And the answer is very meaningful. As we are teaching in all through the Yeshem website, the names of something is how you grasp it intellectually as well as intuitively. If you cannot name something, there's no connection to that entity. If someone gives you a false name, you do not have a truthful understanding or a truthful connection. There are many cultures in this world that name children with many names. One of the things that we will come to understand is that each one of those names represents an aspect of their soul. When you name a child with two names, there's really two different parts of that child. Are they complementary parts or not? When you name a child after a grandparent who passed away because of illness, are you connecting that child to that same illness, God forbid? Everything is in the name. When we study the names of the souls, why are there five parts, and other aspects and other questions, we're going to become amazed. And this is why Rabbi Chaim Vital starts the book with this subject. What is the name of these five souls? I don't want to say parts of souls. The highest level is called Yechida, and its translation is singular, or sometimes called unity, or sometimes called oneness. But as I said, it's not unified, because when you say unified, you're implying that there was once two parts, and now there is one, two or more parts. The next level is called Chaya, and its translation is life. But it's also being translated on this website as life force. why would it be called a life force as opposed to life? What is the difference? Life force represents essence. Life represents a process. And there's a unique difference between process and essence. The next level down is neshama, which has the shoresh of the word neshama, means to breathe, breath. But this level of soul is being called breath, neshama. There are people in Hebrew who are in Israel who are named Neshama. Does it mean that that's their name is their soul? What's happening when you name someone Neshama? I also comment that the Neshama and the word Mishnah have the same letters. The Mishnah is a section of Talmud, the oldest section, and therefore the more concealed and the more valuable. Mishnah also includes a shoresh that translates as secondary. Yet this level of soul, neshama, is normally considered the largest part of the soul that is capable of entering the body. We, in New Age metaphysics, and everywhere in metaphysics, we speak of an aura. The Talmud tells us that our aura extends in every direction, the equivalent of 88 inches. What is an aura? We have a body that can be seen. That body conceals within it soul parts, soul levels, nefesh, ruach, neshama. Outside of the body, but connected to the neshama, is the chaya and the yechida. This is our neshama. Excuse me. This is our aura. The world, the earth, has a neshama. It has an aura. Where do we see that aura? We see it in the green. When we take pictures from the satellites out from outer space, and we see the blue-green, that color represents the aura of the Earth. There are people in this world who are capable of discerning aura's colors. There are other people who will tell you that they, through energy healing, are transforming the colors of your aura. That's a whole different subject. But what I wanted to express is this understanding that, for the most part, the neshama is the highest level that fits in the body. But it's called secondary. It's shoresh is secondary. The same letters are of neshama that spells mishnah, that means secondary, is referring to the fact that it's an oral law. It's referring to the idea that the neshama has larger, more comprehensive levels of consciousness called Chaya and Yechida. The next lower level is called Ruach, and Ruach translates as wind or spirit. What does it mean, spirit? What moves the wind? It's not a solid thing, the atmosphere, and yet there's movement in it. What causes that? And the idea of a spirit comes from that question. The lowest level is called nefesh. And the meaning of nefesh is rest. And on the website, they translate it as that which has come to rest. Because there's no level below the nefesh, and it comes to rest in the body. In Chassidut, which is Kabbalah in a concealed form, it's the teachings of the Baal Shem Tov and many of his followers up until Chabad of today, and the Breslovers and many other different teachers who have created students who continue their teaching. In Chassidut, the word nefesh is translated as animal soul, indicating the strongest emotions. What I'm going to read from to you now is Rabbi Teicher's commentary and explanation. Each of these levels represents a different level of light that originated from Ein Sof, the infinite light emanating out from God. On the level of Yechidah, the light is still very sublime and unified. On the level of Chaya, it is less so, but it is considered to be the life force of all that comes after it. Neshama is derived from the word neshima, which means breath, because this level of soul is said to be like a breath in the mouth of God, so to speak. And remember, it says that God blew a breath into Adam. Ruach is the soul light as it leaves the stage of neshama, like a breath blown out of the mouth of a person. The soul light comes to rest on the level of nefesh, which is in the blood of a physical human being, and therefore it acts as an interface between the spiritual and the physical. As we know, blood has red cells and white cells. The white cells represent the spiritual. They represent the nefesh. They represent our immune system. The red cells represent the animal. They represent the physical. The white cells represent the right column of the tree of life. The red cells represent the left column of the tree of life. The left column is the desire to receive. The right column is the desire to share. These names of the soul parts or sparks are considered lights in contrast to vessels. They are actually vessels. Our soul is a vessel. Our five levels of soul is a vessel. This is another example of Rabbi Ashline's teaching about the theory of relativity. As a light, they create and fulfill the levels below themselves. The levels below them are vessels. But then they fulfill the lights below them, the vessels below them. And as they fulfill the vessels below them, they become a light. When a person performs righteous deeds, it unifies the levels of his soul. Certainly, these names have not been ascribed by chance or convenience. Rather, know that the person himself is the spiritual element within the body, while the body is only a garment for the person, not the person himself. This is what is written: it shall not be smeared on human flesh. In other words, flesh of man implies that the flesh belongs to the man, but it is not the man himself. Flesh of man is only the body, an exterior garment. It is not the real man. My commentary to this: the body has no life of its own. It is only alive by virtue of the nephesh, which inhabits the blood. Our science has determined that there are red cells and white cells in the blood. The white cells are the immune system. The white cells are aspects of the nephesh. The ruach actually is the lowest level of emotions, while the neshama represents the intellect. The chaya represents the unconscious, which has both intellect and emotions. And the yichida represents the totality of wisdom, understanding, and knowledge of the universe. I'd also like to explain the idea of the flesh of man being a garment. We don't have the vocabulary yet to understand what I'm going to say. So I'm just going to give you the understanding, and we'll probably come back to this many times in our classes. We have just named five levels of soul. Three that fit into the body, so to speak, and two that surround the body. The body is described as a garment, but in actuality, the garment is the lowest level of soul. We don't consider the body a soul. But remember, there's two types of responses. If I reach out to touch the stove and it's warm, my body reacts and brings my hand out of harm's way faster than my mind can say, "It's hot, move your hand." That's body consciousness. That's a soul level of body consciousness. The body is the largest desire to receive in this chain of souls that we have just named. So there's really six levels: the five levels, and the body is the sixth level of soul. this book of reincarnation doesn't discuss that. But the purpose of the rectification, of the tikkun, of the fixing that we need to do of ourselves and the world, that fixing takes place on six levels. We call them Chesed, Gevura, Tiferet, Netzach, Chod, Yesod, Malchut. Malchut is the seventh. The body is the lowest level representing Yesod. And the Chaya and all the other names you can match up to the Sefirot that I've mentioned. Our purpose of rectification is to correct the body, make the body kowtow. Too strong a word. Make the body obey the directions of the soul. That is the purpose of our physical world today. After we achieve that tikkun, we will then correct aspects of our soul, and then we will correct aspects of the higher levels of soul until we have all returned to the endless world, totally corrected, having left the bread of shame behind. Continuing to read what Rabbi Chaim said, since man connects all four worlds of Abiyah, Abiyah is an acronym formed from the initial letters of Atzilut, Briyah, Yetzirah, and Asiyah. A-B-Y-A. This correspondence of the four worlds and the parts of the soul follows now. There is a direct correspondence. What it's saying is the Chaya lives in the world of Atzilut, and the Neshama lives in the world of Briah, and the world of the soul of Ruach lives in the world of Yetzirah, and the Nefesh lives in the world of Asiyah. Asiya means action. Yetzirah means formation. Briah means creation. And Atzilut means emanation. And there is a higher level world called Adam Kadmon. But we don't speak of that, because that's a unity. That's the Yechidah. That's so close to the endless world that relative to us, it's considered the endless world. The commentary of Rabbi Teicher. Please note, the world of Adam Kadmon corresponds to the soul level of Yechidah. It is left out of most correspondence lists. In this case, since the acronym started at Atzilut, Adam Kadmon translates as primordial man. This has led to large and serious mistakes by many New Age philosophies, since they usually come from people who were raised within one of the Christian churches. And in my opinion, they have also made these mistakes. The initial mistake is that Adam Kadmon is the first man described in the early chapters of Genesis in the Torah. That is a totally false understanding. Adam Kadmon is a world. The first man, while not having been created on this earth, was created from the dust of this earth. and initially lived in the Garden of Eden that did not exist on this earth until after the sin. A very important concept is implied by our texts here. Even though a person's physical body is minuscule compared to the physical world, his spiritual soul spans all five spiritual worlds that emanate from the En Sof. Since there is a direct and automatic correlation between the levels of soul and the levels of worlds, man's actions, besides having a direct impact on his soul, have a direct impact on the corresponding spiritual worlds. When a person performs righteous deeds, it unifies the levels of his soul, and hence the four worlds as well. The opposite is true if a person sins. Remember that phrase that we started this class with? I'm going to scroll back up to get to it again. Our souls impact and influence several levels of spiritual worlds. You just had a hint at how our actions and our consciousness make change in the upper worlds, which then make change in the lower worlds, and this continues forever, ad infinitum. Because when we make change in the lower world, we are changing our soul in the lower world, and that soul in the lower world then changes the soul in the higher world, which changes the soul in that the world of the higher world, which then changes the soul, the world below it, which changes the soul within that world below it. And you can see how this gets confusing and why the commentaries truly don't talk about it. And that's why the study of reincarnation and the laws of reincarnation can be so confusing. But not really, because when you simplify it to understand that your consciousness in one world impacts the consciousness in the other, and that impact in the other then sets up a circuit of energy that causes you to continue to change. But in the endless world, there is no change. Only in the lower worlds. And so when we complete the changing of ourselves and reach perfection, we return to the endless. And there's no longer a need for these worlds and this process. Each lower level of soul acts as a body to the higher level of soul. Yet there is also a garment to each soul in each world. In mystical experiences, it is quite common to meet your higher self and to see them in a body that frightens one or scares one into running away from the message of the higher soul. The message that is meant for you from you. We can talk about that extensively, and it's something for you to constantly realize. Continuing with Rabbi Chaim's statements, since man connects all four worlds of Abaya, Atzilut, Bria, Yetzirah and Asiya, emanation, creation, formation, and action. By necessity, there has to exist within him sections from all four worlds, and each section is called by one of the five names. Neranchi, Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama, Chaya, and Yechidah, as we will explain. Rabbi Moshe Chaim Luzzatto uses a glass blower and the creation of the glass vessel as an analogy to the relationships of the soul parts. He does this in his book, Derech Hashem, which has been translated and published by Feldheim as The Way of God. The glass blower analogy. In the Zohar, we find that Nefesh is bound to the Ruach, the Ruach to the Neshama, and the Neshama to the Blessed Holy One. The three thus form a sort of chain, linking man to God. The idea of these three parts is best explained on the basis of the verse, God formed man out of the dust of the earth, and he blew into his nostrils a breath of life. This is likened to the process of blowing glass, which begins with the breath, the nishima of the glass blower. It flows as a wind, the ruach, through the glass blowing pipe, and finally comes to rest, the nefesh, in the vessel that is being formed. The nishama thus comes from the same root as nishima, meaning breath, and this is the breath of God. The nefesh comes from a root meaning to rest, and therefore refers to the part of the soul that is bound to the body and rests there. Ruach means a wind, and it is part of the soul that binds the two levels, the neshama and the nefesh. In my opinion, the verse of Genesis 2.7 that I read to you just now has five levels of soul expressed. God represents the Yechidah. Man represents the body. Dust of the earth represents the nefesh. Blowing represents the neshama, as was explained. And breath represents the ruach, as was explained. Life represents Chaya. If you go read this sentence again, you'll understand these words are in the sentence, and in my opinion, they're code words explaining the five levels of soul. We are out of time, and the rest of this lesson would take us too long. It's actually part two of chapter one. So we will pick this up next week, assuming that you all want to continue this kind of teaching about reincarnation. Does anybody have any questions?
Kind of. Your body is the same as the vessel.
The soul is the same as the vessel. The body is the same as the vessel. They're relative to each other. One is light, sharing with the level below it, which is vessel. And then when it shares to a level below it, it becomes the light for the left vessels below it. So the terms light and vessel, while we explained it to you at the beginning in class number two, it's always relative. If you look at the tree of life, Chachma shares with Chesed, but it also shares with Bina. Chachma is light relative to the vessel Bina, and Bina is light relative to the vessel Chesed, and Chachma is light relative to the vessel Chesed. So Chesed consists of two lights, doesn't it?
Yes. Bina.
And light is unity. I'm sorry, please ask again.
Yes, because Chesed is conformed by the two lights, Bina and Chesed, and Chachma.
Correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But now Chesed is sharing below it to Givurah and also to Hod. So, and Givurah shares with, excuse me, Chesed is sharing with Givurah and Tiferet and Hod. And so you see, when we speak of lights, we have to be talking in terms of relativity. And that's why there is no such thing as one truth. And every religion in the world has said, mine is the path, mine is the way, mine is the truth. There is no such thing as one truth, because it's always relative to the vessel and the lights that are fulfilling that vessel. And when you are in a process, the lights can be incorrect, not perfect for the vessel. The teapot, the vessel, can be half full, three-quarters full, 10% full. And those are different levels of light. 10% full is a light. It's a fulfillment of the vessel teapot, but it's not a perfect fulfillment. It's not complete. These are metaphors to explain our world and our consciousness. All through history, we've had religious wars where one religion said, I'm right, you're wrong, you need to change. And you can see on many different levels. On one level, all the deaths that took place, but on a strictly intellectual level, I can't know what's the correct fulfillment of your vessel, because you have your own desire to receive that is different from mine. Because that's what makes us different. To answer your question, Laura, yes, the body is a vessel. It's the lowest vessel.
Mm-hmm.
But there are many lights fulfill that body. And if that body is not fully fulfilled with the correct lights, that body is still in the process of correcting. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes.
Oh. Yes, you answered my question. Thank you.
You're welcome. Are there any other questions?
No, not right now.
Okay. The announcements for next week, or this week actually, Thursday night at 10 p.m., we will have a Rosh Chodesh connection, even though it's not Rosh Chodesh until Saturday. But I want to teach you what is the correct connection so that you can take control of the month on Rosh Chodesh. And also, Sunday morning at 10 a.m., we're going to give a class on the Mashiach, the coming of the Mashiach. What do the prophets actually say? So Thursday night is at 10 p.m. and Sunday morning is at 10 a.m. Next Monday, we will be giving class number 5 of the basic class at 7:15 p.m. These times are all West Coast times. And next week, on Tuesday, we will again teach reincarnation, unless I hear from people that they really would rather have a different subject. Because somehow this subject tonight is very intense. And a lot of people don't like to get into that kind of intensity. So let me know. I have the suggestions.
Okay.
I find the subject. Go ahead.
Oh, I like the subject. It's very interesting for me. I like it.
I appreciate your input, Laura, and hopefully I'll hear from others as well over the week. But hopefully next Tuesday we'll continue this class, this lesson, this subject.
Okay, Hannah.
Any other questions or comments before we hang up? And I wish you a Kodesh Tov for Shabbat and a good week. And hopefully we'll speak to you on Thursday.
I will be there. Thank you so much and good night.
Good night. Shalom, you all.
Shalom.